I have a coffee grinder at home, and I have a coffee filter. I've got three different ways of making coffee, so depending on what I want to do, I can make it that way. But I'm also a man on a budget. So I have a set amount of money that I'm allowed to spend. I give myself to spend on coffee, which is like £3 a bag, which if you buy coffee regularly isn't a vast amount of money, but if special occasions, maybe four. And so you have to kind of watch out for the deals and stuff like that. And one of my favorite blends is Tales of Harrogate Italian blend, because it's just an everyday good cup of coffee. It's excellent in the morning. And you drink it all year round, and it's fairly tasty, which is why I buy it. You have to get that on a special offer. It's £2 for £6. You know, some people are nodding if they buy that. It's £3.75 if it's not on a deal. Breaks my budget then. I buy Tales of Harrogate and drink it all year round. But sometimes, right, you get a bag of coffee and you open it up and you can tell immediately that this Tales of Harrogate is a slightly better quality. The beans are beautiful and shiny. You put them in the grinder and immediately it smells a bit different. And you put it in the coffee machine and the aroma of it makes you go, oh, this is going to be a good cup of coffee. And then you sit down at breakfast and you take a mouthful and you're like, oh. And in that moment, the coffee demands that I stop and consider the beauty of this coffee. And it demands that I stop and just filter out the sounds of my kids shouting, screaming, laughing, or whatever they're supposed to be doing as we get ready for school. And I just want to sit absolutely still and look out the window at the garden and drink my coffee. I sometimes get that. I sometimes don't. But it sort of demands that you pay attention. You're awake to that moment. And there's something about that in the passage we're going to look at today. So we are looking at a passage from Ecclesiastes, which is a strange little book in the middle of the Bible. And I'm going to be reading from Ecclesiastes 3. Now, this is a passage that you might well recognize. It's often used in funerals, actually, as well as in other contexts. And it's something that I hear referenced in public culture and things like that on a regular stillness to this day. So, a time for everything. There is a time for everything, a season for every activity under the heavens, a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to uproot, a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to tear down and a time to build, a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance, a time to scatter stones and a time to gather them, a time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing, a time to search and a time to give up, a time to keep and a time to throw away, a time to tear and a time to mend, a time to be silent and a time to speak, a time to love and a time to hate, a time for love, for war, and a time for peace. What do workers gain from their toil? I have seen the burden of God laid on the human race. He has made everything beautiful in its time. He has also set eternity in the human heart, yet no one can fathom what God has done from beginning to end. I know that there is nothing better for people than them to be happy and to do good while they live, that each of them may eat and drink and find satisfaction in all their toil. This is the gift of God. So before we kind of look at the specific words we're going to be doing today, I just want to give you a little bit of setting. We have this little book called Ecclesiastes, which is a slightly odd book, different in its tone, in its language, in its literature, and it's what is called the wisdom book. It was from the wisdom literature. There's five wisdom books in the Bible. The famous one is Proverbs, and Stella preached from one verse in the book of Proverbs. And it's worth considering that these books, these Proverbs, these books of wisdom are like teachers to us. They're there to teach us wisdom that teaches us how to live, how to love, how to live and love under God's guidance, the way that God would want. So there's teachers. Now, you've met many different teachers in your time, and indeed you might indeed be a teacher. If Proverbs was a teacher, Proverbs would be like that young, enthusiastic, passionate teacher who might have just come out of college, who's got all the best techniques, is optimistic, I struggle with that word to get out, optimistic about all that can be done. Ecclesiastes, on the other hand, is more like a sort of slightly down on the edge, ruffled, bit looking a bit rough, 50-year-old university professor who will not give you a direct answer to any of your questions. If Proverbs, I think if you like this, Proverbs was a mathematical equation, it would be 1 + 1 = 2. Proverbs, it's quite simplistic in its formation of how it works. If you do this and you do this, you get this. 1 + 1 = 2. Now, if you were to ask that very same question to Ecclesiastes, he would look at you in the eyes and he would go, but what do you mean by one? What is the concept of one? And furthermore, what does plus even mean? And regardless of the answer to the question, I have no clue at all. Ecclesiastes and its strange formation could be summed up in this way, in the first few words of the book, which is surprising. The words of the teacher, son of David, king of Jerusalem. These are his words. Meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher, utterly meaningless. Everything is meaningless. Which is a very surprising way to start a book in the Bible. I said I was going to very briefly touch on that. One of the things that is helpful, I think, in understanding what those words might mean for us and the book as well, because these words meaningless comes from the word in Hebrew called hevel or hebel, and it's repeated 39 times in the book of Ecclesiastes. It's not just like one thought, meaningless. It's repeated over and over again through the book. And the word comes from the idea of breath or smoke, of vapor. And vapor or smoke, when you look at coming from a candle, it's beautiful, isn't it? It's beautiful, just momentary, created patterns in the air. But if you try and grab it, what does it do? Just pulls through your fingers. Equally, when you're in the middle of a room that's full of smoke, you can't see where you're going. It is confusing. So the writer wants to tell us, the teacher in Ecclesiastes is telling us, that life is beautiful, it's mysterious, and it's confusing. There's a sense that we can't quite get to grips what life is. And I think that's, when we read that and understand those words meaningless, if we have a sense of that, it helps us understand what he's going to say. But let's have a look at this passage. The first thing that strikes me, I'm just going to be very simplistic today, is we're just going to quickly go through the passage and just point a couple things that I think we can learn. The first thing that strikes you is all the times, right, that are listed. I think we could recognize a lot of them. There is one that sticks out. I have never in my life woken up and thought, today is a time for me to scatter stones. You know what I mean? It's just not been it. There's never been that time for me yet. When one considers, yes, Jill, I'm going to scatter stones today. It's this time. Now, actually, I was thinking about this and I was saying, and I can't even think of a time when we might gather stones. But yesterday morning, what were we doing? We were gathering stones. We were gathering stones and rubble. So I can see that, but the scattering of stones, there must be some sort of historical reason why that makes sense to somebody, but it doesn't make much sense to me. But what we have is this list of all these different times or seasons. And I think what Ecclesiastes really wants to, they might say to us, is that there are all these different times and seasons. And in our culture and in our time, maybe in the West, maybe particularly in the middle classes, we spend an enormous amount of time and effort and energy and concern trying to flatten life, to bring security to our life, to put walls up that mean these seasons don't impact us. Now, some of these things that are written down here, they're things we never want to face. But the writer of Ecclesiastes warns us that no matter how much effort and energy and time you put into building walls and trying to build security into your life, they are meaningless in the effect that life can have on us. And some of us here will have testimonies for good and for bad of these moments in life when life seems to overwhelm you no matter how much effort and energy you put into it. There's a couple of examples that I kind of think of, and one of the things that struck me is health. We spend an enormous amount of time and energy and resources as a society on our health with remarkable impacts. You think when, like 300 or 400 years ago, I'm 39, I would be coming up to the average age when people start to pass away. And now in this society, I was reading an article, 40 isn't middle age. That's not even middle age anymore. Well, technically, I kind of think, well, it is probably because, you know, 80 is, we're not even at 80, a life expectancy of 80. But people don't see 40 as even middle age now because of the remarkable developments we've seen in healthcare, nutrition, housing, all these things. And yet, I would suggest if someone came from the past, from 400 years ago, and came to our time, they would look at us and say, why are you so worried about your health? You've got there. You've got there. You've got to the promised land. Look at how good your lives are. Look at all the diseases you've managed to fix. Look at all the tragedy and the early deaths you've managed to fix. And yet you are consumed with fear. And we can be. I'm not saying all of us. But as a society, I would suggest that we may be too consumed about this idea. And so even though we get where we want to, we become fearful. Another thing might be that one of the greatest risks, one of the greatest joys that we face in life is relationships. The greatest risk is to trust someone, to love someone, to forgive someone, to let someone back in when they've hurt you. And yet what we see in society is that more and more people begin to put walls up. They don't want to trust. They want to build a safe place for them, a place where they're not going to get hurt. And we build up these walls, and some of them are understandable, some of them maybe even realistic at points. But then we discover that we are all alone, and we have no one in our lives, and we have no one to trust, and we have no one to love, and we self-face a tragic situation. The writer Ecclesiastes wants to warn us about building a secure life. He wants to warn us and say, the only thing you really can trust is God. God is there in all these situations. Once you've got this idea of all these seasons and these warnings to us, you crack on, and it says this in 9, what do workers gain from their toil? I have seen the burden laid on the human race. He has made everything beautiful in his time. He has set out eternity in the human heart, and yet no one can fathom what God has done to beginning, from beginning to end. So the writer wants to just point out that we've got all these different times, these seasons, these times, different things, and that God has done these things beautifully, and he's made some beautiful things, and he's given us this life. But the writer to Ecclesiastes wants to warn of this. Don't spend too much time trying to work out what season or time you're in. It says in the NET Bible, I think it's probably maybe a more helpful translation, it says, God has put the sense of the future and the past in the human heart. So we have a sense of where we've come from and a sense of where we're going. But we cannot work out what season we are in now. That's beyond us. It's a mystery to us. And I think it's just a helpful warning to us in our time, especially maybe of a church of our history and background. We are from the charismatic background. God did something very special within the church, where God revealed his nowness, his speaking nowness, his acting nowness, his word to the church now, that revitalized the church. And we're a product of that history. Ronan, when he preached recently, spoke about his testimony of encountering what God was doing through the church. But one of the dangers of our tradition is that we can become very confident about proclaiming what God is doing and what season of time we're in. I remember one summer going to a number of different festivals, and I was told I was in the Abraham generation, I was in the Jacob generation, and I was in some other sort of generation, and God was doing A, B, C, and D. Now, I'm not putting those sermons down, because actually, I still remember them, which is better than what most people ever remember of my sermons. I can still remember them. They meant something to me. They were important. They revealed something of God to me. But I think the writers of Ecclesiastes might just gently suggest that we should be a bit careful when we start saying that this is what God is doing, and this is what he's doing, and this is the season we're going in. I think we can have a sense of what God is doing. I think we can be confident in knowing who God is, because we see that in the scriptures. We just need to be a little bit careful when we start proclaiming these things in overdue confidence. The other question that comes to me when I read this little passage about the times is, well, I recognize these times, these seasons, but I feel like I never got out of one. I got stuck in one, and I haven't moved on. And one of the things that strikes me, a season that we might testify of that, there may be many reasons, but ill health is one of them. People here, and myself even, something in my testimony, you feel like you're stuck in a season that you just never get out of. For 15 years, I struggled with chronic fatigue, which has impacted me with energy and with pain. And 2 years ago, I recovered from that. I'm going to tell you a bit of a story about how that happened. And you might not know that about me. I had it when I came to Liberty. We've been here for 7 years. And it impacted me differently over time. I was sometimes working full time, but it meant that when I got back from home, I didn't have any energy for life and for family. Sometimes I was much more affected. I could do much less with my life. And for 15 years, it felt like a time that just would not come out of. And some of you feel like you're just stuck in a time. Or you meet people, you know people, and you think they just always seem to be caught in that season. They never seem to get out of it. And there's a mystery. I don't know why all these things work, but I think the Ecclesiastes would warn us of this. Actually, let me say this thing about it. One of the things I discovered in the midst of my illness was this thing that I hated became security to me. I knew it. And actually, it's very easy to develop your identity, your expectation, who you are, around the very thing that you hate. And that becomes a very dangerous thing because then we perpetuate that pattern. And I think the warning or the wisdom or the truth that Ecclesiastes would bring is the way that we make sure we don't get stuck in a moment is that we don't focus on the season we are, that indeed we lift our eyes to God. And as we're going to see in a moment, we just take every day as it comes. Every day is given as a gift for eating, for drinking, and for work. And that we receive those moments as a gift from God. Now, that isn't going to magically solve all our problems or some of those feelings that we have. But I think what it can do is help us lift our eyes from our moment and receive something. And then in that moment, be ready to be able to move on as and when situations change. So let's look at the next section. I know there is nothing better for people than to be happy and do good while they live, that each of them may eat and drink and find satisfaction in their toil. This is a gift of God. And it's this verse more than any of the ones which have been of particular resonance to me. And it's not very complicated or very clever or very profound in some ways, but I think it has a beautiful richness that I think can teach us something. I think it can help us in a number of ways in addressing what I've just talked about, getting stuck in a season, receiving the fact that God has given us the gifts of eating and drinking and finding joy in our toil and the things that we have to lay what we're responsible for. It's those moments where the coffee grabs you and you have to just accept there's a gift. That moment is a gift to you and you can receive and enter into it. The other thing that this sort of whole theology and this practice and those words that we see here is I think it does challenge us in some of our divided thinking. Another way, posh way of saying divided thinking is dualism. And there's much good divided or dualistic thinking that we have in our faith and as people. So let me do not deride that, because one of the good dualisms we have in our thinking is that God is fundamentally good, we sang it, and that the devil is bad. They are not one and the same. They are two polar opposites. So it's good to have divisive thinking in some ways, or dualistic thinking. But there are some dualistic thinking, some divided thinking that doesn't help us. And I believe denies who God is and denies even who we are. And again, one of the things that we do, one of the challenges I think we have with our history is that we put the supernatural above the natural or the spiritual above the natural. Now, don't get me wrong. I believe in the gifts of God. I am delighted to be brought up in a tradition where God's now word, his now action, the people I've seen, the healing I've received, I think they are brilliant, and we are tragically at a loss in the church if we miss that. But if we put that here and put in the natural world here, just the very basic things, we begin to deny, or we begin to not deny because we'd never say that, but we begin to counter the idea that God is a creator. He gave us every day. He gave us the very fabric that we live in. All these things are gifts of God. And if we don't understand that both the supernatural and the natural are both of gift of God, then we become divided in our thinking and we begin to deny the nature of a creator God who's given us all. And we begin to lose our sense of the giftedness of everyday living and life. And therefore, we begin to lose our place in God's story, and we begin to lose our place in the story that God would have us. And so we need to be helpful. And this passage is just so earthy. It's just so simple. That each of them may eat and drink and find satisfaction in their toil. This is the gift of God. Now, I said that I struggled with health, with chronic fatigue for 15 years. And 2 years ago, God brought me about healing. And you know how he did it? He did it through bricks and through soil. 2 years ago, Jill and I bought a house. Jill's my wife, if you don't know her. We bought a house that needed work. And in that process, I don't understand it. In that process of breaking down walls, fixing them up, scattering stones. In that process of bringing a garden that was a ruin back to life again, I have found healing. I am healed of chronic fatigue. Now, is that any better or worse than the healing that I would have got in a meeting? I have gone for healing for my chronic fatigue many times. Maybe hundreds of people have prayed for me, friends and family, or hundreds of times, thousands of times over the 15 years for my healing. And I believe their prayers were answered. It wasn't in a meeting. It wasn't, you know, after an appeal. It was in the process of rebuilding a house and fixing up a garden. That was God's tools of healing in my life. But that is no less valuable or important or beautiful or gifted to me than anything else. And for me, that's just so wonderful that God might give me that healing and bring me out of that season and into something future. And I just want to sort of testify to what God has done in my life in that way. We're now going to go into communion. I spoke about this moment, this coffee moment, where the world grabs you, the very simple, earthy things that we experience, grabs you by the shirt collar and says, wake up, receive. For me, it's that coffee. For me, it's walking in the evening, and sometimes the sky, the color blue, is just so like beautiful and deep that I just can't stop. I can't hold myself, but just to stop and just to look at the sky. And communion is a gift to us, the church, to do many times where we can just stop. When we share these very natural things, wine and bread, eating and drinking, the pastor said, eating and drinking, that's a gift he gave us. Where we can stop and we can think about what Jesus has done for us. What he did for us at the cross. And God sent his son to this world, into the very eating and drinking of this world, and revealed the glory of the created order, revealed the glory of the supernatural works of God through his healings and all these things, and ultimately through his defeating death at the cross. Communion is this moment we stop and we consider, but we also stop and consider in a community. We don't take communion by ourselves. We stop in this moment and recognize where we are. We stop and recognize who we're surrounded by, that these people might be God's special gift to us. And indeed, we might be God's special gift to them. And so that's what we're going to do now.